I believe we may have a guest. Am I right? Hello, Diana Johnson, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
I think I've been torturing you if you've been listening to all this. We're very glad to have our very special guest, Diana Johnson. I've already mentioned that I was very taken with a recent article in Monthly Review called The Western Left and the Russian Revolution, but that's beside the point. She's also written a wonderful book, From Mad to Madness, Inside Pentagon's Nuclear War Planning, a memoir. And very recently, Diana, you wrote a kind of a from-the-shoulder response to a troubling, some thought comical or repulsive development where Maria Machado, a, quote, opposition figure in Venezuela, has been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. And there had been talk that it might be Trump, but you argued this is worse than giving it to Trump. Could you talk about your reaction to this Nobel business?
This is really as bad, just about as bad as it can get, because not only is she not, look, there's been a trend over the past years to award people not for anything they're doing for peace, but for human rights. Mm-hmm. And so the Peace Prize has wandered away from the original goal, which is to award people who are trying to promote some kind of peace. But not only that, this woman, first of all, she's promoting war. She's promoting a civil war. She has called for U.S. Military intervention. She's calling for intervention, invasion of her own country. Mm-hmm. And as for human rights, the rights she's interested in are the rights of the very richest people in Venezuela, mm-hmm. to get back their property that has been socialized. Mm-hmm. Because she happens to be the daughter of the former head of the steel industry, which was socialized and nationalized. Mm-hmm. And so what she's wanting is to reprivatize the oil resources, which she invites the United States to come in and take over. And I mean, this is the most incredibly counterproductive award you can imagine. At least Trump, he's been promoting war, but he says he's interested in peace. At least he says that. She doesn't really even say that. She's congratulated Netanyahu on how he runs the war. She calls for all kinds of invasion of her own country. And it's beyond belief. It's absolute the opposite of what a peace award should be.
Yes, I noticed. And by the way, as you pointed, you said her policy is actually a war policy. Any country on earth would call her conduct treason if they. And the New York Times has already produced a couple of op-ed pieces applauding her. As a matter of fact, the AFL-CIO in the United States applauded her. And they said that this underlines our responsibility to do something about the Venezuelan government.
Yeah, well, we're really in a clown world. We're in an upside-down world, because the fact is that she, of course, all of these color revolutions start out by denouncing elections. Mm-hmm. Maduro has been elected, and there's no proof that this wasn't. But you see, all the people at the rich country club can say, well, I don't know anybody here at the rich country club that voted for Maduro, so obviously, I suppose the election was a fake. Why, none of my relatives voted for him, because they have no idea what's going on down in where the mass of people are living. And So they can they take no respect for elections, and all they want to do is get back private ownership of resources.
Yeah.
But sharing them, of course, with the United States. Well, I don't know what's wrong with the CIO, but obviously there's something seriously wrong with it.
Yes, it's quite a story. It's interesting. They never take an interest in anything. For example, the Palestinian issue, the Gaza, that they have nothing to say about. But they automatically repeat whatever the State Department says when it comes to a place like Venezuela or Cuba. But, you know, and of course, action is actually being initiated. I mean, we're in this new phenomenon. I have to ask you about that. Provocation, the attack on boats of some type off the coast of Venezuela. And the only facts we know are told to us by these wonderful, the Secretary of War tells us what the facts are, the president, but nobody actually knows who has been, had their ship blown up and loss of life. It's like it's not even of interest. We just simply agree. And I haven't seen any Democrats disagreeing with this policy of initiating attacks on civilians in Venezuelan territory.
Look, the two parties have the same horrible policies. They just hate each other a lot for personal reasons. And but it all comes down to the same policies. This thing about, I think there was an admiral who was the chief of the U.S. Command in that region who has honorably resigned. He hasn't said anything, but one leads to suspect that there's actually an honest, decent person in the military who has the decency to resign, because nobody should, with any sense of honor or law, should approve these operations of blowing up little boats without any idea who's in them, what they're doing. They're probably little fishing boats. It's well known by everybody who knows anything about drugs that Venezuela is not a drug country. There are other drug countries around it, but not Venezuela. And this is clearly a totally dishonest pretext to exact regime change by the United States to overthrow Maduro. That's what they want to do. So they talk about drugs as an excuse. And meanwhile, they're killing little people in little boats just to illustrate their lie about drugs coming into the United States from little boats in Venezuela. And there's no proof, no evidence whatsoever for this.
Yeah. We're speaking to Diana Johnston. She is the author of several really important books. I want to emphasize one of them, Circle in the Darkness, Memoir of a World Watcher, which is a brilliant book in my opinion. You mentioned, you have a very interesting portrait of a figure, in very important figure in anti-colonial, anti-imperialist period, Jean-Paul Sartre, and he at least said no when they wanted to give him a prize. I think he's the only one, right?
Yeah, I think, of course, it was a literary prize, I think, but in any case, he just thinks all of these prizes are ridiculous, and I do too. The prizes more and more simply tend to be advertisements for whatever the dominant NATO land Western policy is. And of course, Sartre was not an illustration of that policy, but the I'm saying it's more recent than they were less that way, but I think he thinks these prizes are a fake, and I tend to agree with that.
It is embarrassing, isn't it, that we have this word left, or progressive, socialist, worldwide, and there was no agreement in that community, which should have been long ago. Never take a prize from the Swedish or royal family or the Norwegian. Why would anybody? And to say, well, Nobel wanted to have peace. good for him, but why take that blasted prize? It's clearly used as a political weapon against other countries.
Yes, but I think other prizes, most other prizes which are related to the establishment have the same fault. But of course, the Nobel Prizes are more famous, so they're more damaging, you could say.
Yeah. I want to ask you while we have the opportunity. We have the situation of Ukraine, which changes. It's like having an odd weather cycle. Some days it's raining and then it's sunshine. And we have this question of Trump and saying to Europe, if I understand him, and please tell me what actually is going on, that the U.S. seems to be saying, well, we're not going to give any deadly long-range whatever weapons to Zelensky. However, we'll give it to, say, Canada or Germany and then or Poland, and then they can give it to Zelensky, and therefore there won't be any blood on our hands. Is that – well? Did I characterize that right?
He's not saying he'll give them. He was saying he'll let them buy them.
Oh, I'm sorry. I left that out. Yes.
So, I mean, he's making a business deal out of it. We of course, they are still giving them stuff, and they're still helping them with all kinds of intelligence assets. But this is a big he's saying that he won't he'll sell them, and then first of all, it's not clear. He said he'll sell them to NATO, but NATO is run by the United States, so yeah. You'd be selling them to yourself. It's not clear who would buy them, by the way. Perhaps Germany, although Germany is in economic decline because of its anti-Russian policy. But now then, of course, recently Trump has said no. We need them ourselves, and we can't give them away. But of course, he says one thing one week and the opposite the next week. So you never know exactly what's happening. But he never says anything really clear about this situation that could be the basis of progressing toward a real solution. Mm-hmm. It can be spectacular, but vague at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You know, the proverb, I hear what you say, but I see what you do. It's sort of a pattern. I want to ask you what your thoughts about it. World War I, World War II, the U.S. was known to have its priorities and favorites, but they waited to let the Europeans engage and do most of the dying, and then they played a role in resolving it. Is there something to this thing of making sure that they're at behind the pack when everything happens?
Well, yes, definitely. You know, of course, the war in Vietnam was this big mistake because they actually sent a lot of troops in and who got killed, and they
that was a shock.
And they didn't win the war. So they're back to the imperial tactic of let them fight each other, get them to fight. And I mean, they did that with Iraq and Iran. They encouraged a war between, and after Iraq was weakened by its war, which we encouraged against Iran, then we went in and destroyed Iraq. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, they're letting, I mean, they've incited absolutely, you know, this ridiculous statement that this war of Russia is unprovoked. It has been provoked for years and years and years. Everybody knew that bringing Ukraine into NATO was unacceptable to the Russians because it was a direct threat. It's This war was deliberately provoked and particularly famously by Victoria Nuland in 2014, who instigated a coup to bring in an American puppet government, which would continue to arm against Russia. So this we then. It's getting very dangerous because the Europeans seem to have gone along with this. And it's so crazy because the whole purpose of the war against of the United States provoking Ukraine and so on was to isolate Russia so that Russia, I mean, the basic purpose is to prevent good relations between Russia and Germany because they are very complementary with resources and capital and industry and so on. And the United States leaders know that if you had really good developing relations, which you were getting, by the way, between Russia and Germany, the United States would lose its control of Europe. And so this war with has the purpose of enforcing United States control of Western Europe by forcing a new division between Western Europe, between not just the division, but hostility and hatred. And yet Europeans, and yet it's the Europeans that are now defending this war.
Yes, I mean, there's it. They have the same party problems, and boy, you lived through it. I mean, you were at the press office of the Green Party, which wanted to set a new course for Europe and has turned into the opposite. The parties are failing the people. The people seem to understand. In France and Germany, there is a realization, and certainly the Slovakians, Hungarians, you could see that this is a that they are being drug into something they don't want to be part of. Is that right?
Well, it depends because it's different from one country to another. I mean, certainly in Hungary and Slovakia, you see that. You definitely see it with the Italian population, which is against war. The Italians are always very active in their demonstrations and all sorts of things. But I'm in France, and I talk to people. You know, my the difficulty is that the situation is very dangerous, and the French tend not to believe it. I mean, when Macron talks about, well, go to war, and then people don't believe it because they think, well, he'll say anything. But in Germany, you have a piece of the ruling class, which is represented by the present Chancellor Merz and Ursula von der Leyen, who's running the European Commission, who clearly like the idea of revenge, of redoing the end of World War II with Germany allied with the US and the Western allies winning and defeating Russia. And there's a clear, now, I wouldn't, most Germans don't feel that way, but there's a ruling class with in power that clearly has that notion.
It certainly is sobering business. We just saw, we'll wind up here, but I saw Macron attended. I guess he heard the whistle and showed up at Sharm el-Sheikh. I think Donald Trump said to him, "I see you're being low key." It must be very hard to lead France right now if you're going to be continually sucking up to Donald Trump. It must be repulsive to the French people.
Well, the thing is that Macron now is repulsive to the French people. His popularity is something like 13 or 14, and his governments keep
Those are
falling.
Gorbachev numbers.
It's probably possibly worse, but the thing is that the political scene is so divided that there's no unified opposition. You have opposition on the far left, opposition on the far right, but there's a manipulated middle that prevents either the left or the right from actually winning. And so it stays a deadlock. The situation in France is politically deadlocked for that reason, because I say it's divided by what they call a far left and far right. Neither of them are very far, by the way. It's just that they're not in the established center that Macron is running for the banks and for NATO and so on. Mm-hmm. But he's in there. The election is not supposed to come up until for 2 years, and so he just goes on changing governments, and people tend to just personalize and they just hate Macron, but they don't think about policies. That's the trouble. The mm-hmm. trouble is that politics gets very personalized, and you focus, oh, I can't stand Macron, but you don't stop to really try to define and oppose the awful policies that he is running, or realize the causes of them, which go back to the European Union or to NATO or mm-hmm. to the United States. Mm-hmm. And you just don't like Macron, but you can't get rid of him.
Mm-hmm. If I could, there's one last thing I want to make sure I hear you talk about. You point out, and it seems to me it's really fundamental point you've made, is that there was a thing called the Helsinki Accords, which said human rights was going to be the focus or part of the focus of a peaceful world, and the West turned that into a weapon. Could you talk a little bit about that to close out?
Well, yeah, I mean, not only human rights, but national territorial integrity and sovereignty were also supposed to be the thing about human rights is that it's a license to interfere in other countries. Mm. You see, territorial integrity means you can't, you know, mm-hmm. this is the basis of the peaceful settlement is you don't invade other countries, you don't interfere in other countries. But human rights has turned out to be a license to do precisely that.
Yeah. Yeah. Responsibility to protect.
Yeah, that's right. And so you invent some huge crisis. Now, I two cases that I know very well. I mean, of course, I know very well the situation in Kosovo, but also Libya. A human rights crisis was totally invented, a small, easily settled problem was turned into there's going to be a genocide. And mm-hmm. This then created the pretext to go and bomb the hell out of the country and destroy it in some way. Mm-hmm. And so human rights has just turned into an instrument for intervention, which is otherwise quite illegal.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad you underlined that. Diana Johnstone, author of so many great books, we do appreciate you taking the time, and we always look forward to your writing. Thank you very, very much.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck.
Take
care.
Bye-bye. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto.